You're listening to the Circularity Capital podcast, where we explore the trends that are enabling the transition to a circular economy. You'll hear from Circularity Capital partners, company executives, and other experts as we investigate how we can leverage capital and insight to support growth and innovation in the circular economy. I'm your host, Jamie Butterworth. In this special four-part Circularity Capital Insight podcast, we're going to explore the opportunities, challenges, and practical implications of building a new circular plastics economy. The podcast will take a perspective from four different viewpoints, drawing from industry experts and practitioners. We're going to be speaking to Gerald Narber, who's Program Manager of the Ellen MacArthur Foundation's New Plastics Economy Initiative, to understand what's really driving the need for a new plastics economy and how can the circular economy provide a framework for rethinking and redesigning in this regard. Then we're going to talk to David Rakowski, who's Global Circular Economy and Sustainability Co-Lead at PA Consulting, to understand what's driving business interest in the circular economy and what's the role of innovation in this transition and how can this be accelerated. We're then going to take a corporate perspective and talk to Ilko Schmidt, who's Senior Director of Sustainability at Philips, one of the corporate brands who's really driving the transition towards the circular economy at the moment, to understand what's kind of focusing corporate interest in this topic and what are some of the practical challenges faced in the transition. And finally, we're going to take an innovator perspective and talk to Jens Holmgaard, who's the founder and CEO of Shark Solutions, a circularity capital portfolio company which focuses on taking an existing waste stream and transforming that into a high-performance, high-margin polymer. In this particular episode, we're going to listen to an interview between Gerald Narber and I. Let's take a listen. Welcome, Gerald. Great to hear from you. Great to speak to you.
Thank you, Jamie. Nice to be on the show, so to speak.
Well, to start off with, I wondered whether you could say a few words about your role at the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, and then we're going to dive into some questions around the new plastics economy work and more broadly how we can use the circular economy as a framework for rethinking this challenge.
Sure, happy to. My name is Gerald. I work in the new plastics economy team of the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. And in the team, I'm responsible for their global commitment, which is an initiative that we launched back in 2018 together with the United Nations Environmental Programme to really drive consistency and unite the whole value chain that works with plastics, in particular plastic packaging, against one vision of a circular economy for plastics and a set of comprehensive 2025 targets for all of them to, you know, in concerted motion effort, work towards and realizing that vision. And that it's a great effort and great to be working on that, because you see so many different organizations. It goes from the recyclers to the packaging producers, the brands, but also governments are signatory to this initiative. Small and large, we're all, you know, trying to understand how they can be part of the transition, part of the story of the solution to prevent plastics from becoming waste and really, you know, create a system that can work in the longer term.
Fantastic. Thanks, Gerald. And if we go back a step, why do we need a new type of plastics economy? What's the kind of rationale? What are the things that are causing both corporate brands and also governments to seek to change?
Yeah, so I was thinking a bit back. So I'm not sure if you know, I'm not sure how many people know, but back in the 50s, there used to be advertisements for a celebration of disposable plastics, plastic cutlery and plates. There are some great images out there like flying in through the air and really celebrating that with that new invention back in the day, we would be freed from household chores such as dishwashing. And so that was really, you know, really a positive movement then. And nowadays, we see governments trying to ban single-use plastics and consumers sometimes suing large corporates. We're flooded with imagery of animals, you know, maybe dying or fighting plastic. So, you know, so what happened in those 60 years is a question you could argue. And I think that, you know, and I think what I would say is like plastics basically is a victim of its own success. It's the material comes with so many advantages. It's very cheap to produce. It's durable, versatile, and lightweight. flexible. And you know, and if we bring it back to the topic of plastic packaging, it has so many qualities to in terms of protection or as a barrier that you know it really offers a lot of great ways to package food, particularly. So you could say that way we sort of like got addicted to using plastics, and we started using much more and more. Back in the 50s, what I just said, I think it was around 2 million tons of plastic packaging being used then, which currently is about 400 million today. So we use it more and more and more, but we didn't really think about where would all these plastics go. And that's where we sort of like, you know, missed thinking about it or forgot to think about it. Because the waste is one of the key problems here. If you think about the New York City, the people in New York annually throw away about 9 billion plastic bags, carrier bags. There really is no away, right? I mean, either that plastics is being buried or burned or even leaked into the environment, you know, our oceans or rivers or lands. And some of it does get recycled, of course. But I do have to curb any enthusiasm there on recycling, because if you think about plastic packaging specifically, it's 14% of plastic packaging is collected for recycling. And then only of that 14%, 2% ends up actually being recycled back into a plastic packaging. So, you know, we spend a lot of effort into it and everybody knows about it, but we're not really good at it, really, if you look into the numbers.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah.
So when we look at today's economy from a plastics perspective, it's predominantly very linear, I guess you would say. So how can we use the framework of the circular economy to rethink a new plastics economy, and what do you think that looks like?
Sure. How we have thought about three key strategic areas for work on creating a circular economy for plastics. The first point would be to eliminate the plastics we do not need. The second one would be to shift to a reusable model, so we keep those plastics in use. And the third is the circulation of the material itself, so it remains in the economy. Let me dive a bit deeper into those three points. Elimination of packaging that we do not need. That basically aims at reducing the volumes. And there are many of those packaging that are problematic or unnecessary. If you think about maybe you buy meat and you get a black container that contains your meat from the supermarket, very, very likely that black container cannot be recycled in your local recycling facility because they use a near infrared technology that does not recognize that that container, so it won't be sorted. Or if you think about a bottle for your fruit juice, for instance, the label around the bottle is also problematic because it's flexible, can't be recycled. So there's a lot of elements within our the portfolio of packaging that we currently use and buy and have in our supermarkets, etc., that we can should try to work and to eliminate from it. So to replace it with other materials or innovate in such a way that label, for instance, around the plastic bottle can be replaced by printing the text on the bottle itself, as an example. Or if you think about a cucumber wrapping, you know, there's this flexible wrapping on a cucumber. It helps a lot to keep the cucumber fresh. It might even extend the shelf life up to 2 weeks. So it has a great element in terms of preventing food waste. But you know, there are some elements, examples now currently out there where they replace it with an edible barrier, so you don't need that plastic anymore, and you can just eat the cucumber with the wrapping and still preserve the cucumber for a longer life. So those examples of innovation are ways of to get rid of those plastic packaging that are difficult, problematic, don't work. And then another one is a really important one, is the shift to reuse. And what I said before, celebrating the disposability of plastic packaging, moving away from that, and rethinking how can we make the packaging last longer, make it more durable, so it cycles through the economy and it's used again and again to deliver the content. You know, and a lot of people think about the milkman, for instance. In this case, if you're a bit older, there used to be a time maybe in your areas where the milkman came to your door, brought your glass bottles of milk, and then he would collect or she collect the empty ones, clean it, and refill it. That model, but then in the modern day and age, is what we think is a massive opportunity. And there's some great examples out there. The Loop platform currently, also just launched through in the UK actually, has worked with a lot of brands who deliver very everyday products, ice cream, shampoo, home cleaning products. They've redesigned the packaging into more durable ones, reusable ones. They deliver to your door, so it's free, an e-commerce system basically. They collect again the empty ones, clean it, and they give it back to the brand who can refill it and then circulate it back into the economy, really. Or even in the city system, you see the Cup Club is a great example where reusable cups for coffee or other beverages are, you know, can be purchased from a coffee shop, and you can you drink it on the go and you return it to another shop, so that that same packaging gets recirculated again. So there are loads of really good examples, and they require a lot of innovation really to rethink how you deliver your food or your beverage to the consumer, but comes with a lot of upside as well in terms of new markets, new marketing opportunities, customer retention, etc. So that's a point that we think, you know, we really advocate strongly about. And then the last point, of course, and that is, you know, we spoke a bit about the recycling. That is, of course, still part of the whole equation of solving, you know, the material itself. If it is used and it is disposed of, how do we ensure that there is enough infrastructure to capture and collect all those materials, so it's not lost, but actually we loop back into the system and can act as a raw material to produce new packaging.
Fantastic. If we go to the framework itself and we look at concepts like cradle to cradle, and we look at the idea of technical nutrients and biological nutrients within the economy, would you be able to say a few words on how you see that framework fitting and the role that, for example, whether it's different types of feedstock, so biological source feedstocks coming in to actually manufacture different types of plastics, and also the role that these two different nutrients would play in a new plastics economy?
Sure. To me, it's logical. I don't know how many people know, but basically plastics currently are produced from either oil, gas, or coal derived products. So that's the source for all of our packaging, the vast majority of it. And indeed, if we think about a system in which plastics can be used for the long term, then we are thinking about decoupling that from that feedstock and then bringing it for one more on recycled feedstock. So, you know, as I just said now, the material itself stays within the economy. But there's also a place indeed for more bio-based materials. So we don't have all the negative and externality that currently are connected with the production of plastic itself. So that is the vision to where we want to move towards. And we do see, and at the same time, if we think about the current economics of plastics and how more compostable or bio-based plastics are operating in the system, they are difficult currently to work with. And what I mean with that is, in the after-use system, when plastic packaging is used and it's disposed of and it's being collected for recycling, if the recycler cannot distinguish between a fossil, you know, normal plastic, you know, virgin plastic, you could say, or bio-based plastic, it could lead to all kinds of problems in that after-use system, and you know, the lower quality of recycled content, etc. That is a challenge, and that has to do with the fact that the consumer itself often also doesn't know, either doesn't see the difference or doesn't know how to dispose of it. So there are a lot of challenges with that. But in the longer term, we do see that, you know, shifting from this finite fossil feedstock into a more bio-based is part of the equation that we're advocating here. Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Gerald. And maybe one final follow-up question on this topic around the framework. We also, I think, are beginning to see quite a lot of innovation of companies moving away from plastic into using alternatives like paper and card and innovations in that space. I assume that would fall into your first bucket, where you're looking for innovations that mean that the plastic doesn't need to exist in the first place and can be substituted with potentially other materials. Would you be able to say a few words on your thoughts as to how much opportunity there is there and how that would fit?
Sure, yeah, that's correct, as your point, that the substitution is part of the how we'd like to see it as a wider framework for deciding which material works in the best situation. Actually, one step before that is what I try to allude to with, for instance, the wrapper on the cucumber, is to rethink is packaging even needed in the first place. You know, because, you know, it is cheap, it's probably a safety element to do it, but do you really need the packaging? Because that, you know, it will lead to waste. So starting off with that one, if you can avoid it on the onset, that's maybe the first step. And then you have the choice, okay, what is the right material for the solution or the delivery model that I'm trying to work here? And you need substitution to other materials, which could be, you know, we in the loop model that I mentioned before, there have been ice cream containers have been redesigned for aluminium ones, you know, very durable, more heavy and more expensive ones. But, you know, if it's in a reusable format, that's an ideal choice, because it not only allows you to keep it for several loops and several uses, but it also allows also you to keep the ice cream much more cooler and longer outdoors out of the freezer than you would ever be possible to do with a plastic or a paper cup. So, you know, it's the meeting or matching the material choice to the service that you're trying to deliver is really important. And of course, there is a lot of work happening currently in terms of shifting to paper or cardboard for obvious reasons, because it's quite compatible. There's a massive supply of it. The recyclability typically of paper is relatively good. At the same time, there's also, you know, the contamination of that stream is also challenging with sometimes thin layers of plastic, etc. So it's not a blanket solution either, but there are a lot of examples where indeed replacement with these kinds of materials function even better for the brands or the retailers. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you, Gerald. And if we now come to the work of the foundation, so the Ellen MacArthur Foundation has obviously played a pivotal role in accelerating the transition towards the circular economy and improving people's understanding of the concept. So this is clearly an area where you've got a very complicated problem and you have multiple actors, whether they be corporates, whether they be governments, NGOs, the startup community, etc. Could you tell us a bit more about what the New Plastics Economy Initiative is about and how it's working to engage people on this front and to accelerate that transition?
That's true. As we, as you know, to transition a system, you need all actors who play a role in the system to be part of it. So, you know, indeed, we work across the whole value chain with large and small players. The global commitment, what I mentioned, what I'm responsible for, is really targeting the large corporates to take on, to endorse the vision of a circular economy for plastics can be realized. And then secondly, make really tangible commitments to transition their portfolio on the axis, what I meant, just talked about, elimination, reuse and circulation. So they all set targets in terms of whether it be including more recycled content in their packaging or shifting to a reuse model or eliminating certain problematic packaging. So those are all part of the commitments that they make and set targets on that against the 2025 timeline. So within the next couple of years, we hope to see quite a significant shift in the portfolios. So that's the first level, endorsing vision, making the commitments, and secondly, report annually on progress, so we can actually see what is happening. You know, how far are they making progress? Is the recycled content I mentioned, is that doable? Are they successful? Are there problems there that they have as a brand, but maybe they have it with all of their peers or in the wider system? So those are, you know, elements that come to light through the reporting, so we can see, you know, what we should work on collectively. So that's what the global commitment is driving, these commitments and this transparency. And then we try to work with the leading organizations in the New Plastics Economy Initiative with about 50 organizations to see, okay, now what are the main challenges that we need to tackle? How do we start the innovation, start the collaboration to really drive those transitions going forward? That's one part of the thing that we're trying to do. United Nations Environmental Program, I mentioned before, is dealing with the governments because they also have a big role to play through stimulation packages, regulatory impact, but also investments. And then we have what we call plastic pacts. Those are national or sometimes regional implementation vehicles where the industry, either being on the country such as United Kingdom or France or the Netherlands, really comes together, both public and private, so the government and the industry together, and identify how they as a country can move towards that same vision of circular economy for plastics and make really tangible targets when it comes down to recycling, recycled content, etc. So those are bringing all these elements together is what we're trying to do at the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, working with the leading brands, working with the governments, and developing, you know, keeping them, making sure that they report on progress so we can see what's happening. At the same time, stimulating local and regional implementation through those plastic pacts And that's really, playing on a lot of chess boards at the same time and trying to speak with a lot of organizations and trying to see, you know, where is the discussion going and how can we stimulate organizations to do more and more on this? Because, you know, we're only a couple of years ago, there was no transparency on this. People realized it was an issue, but there was no collaboration happening in the market. A recycler would not really know what a brand would put on the market in terms of plastic packaging or what was included. And now you see that they are exchanging information so they can much more streamline towards, you know, what are the materials we're working with. And if the recycler knows what's coming on the market, he or she can invest in technology to actually capture it. So there's high quality of out of recycled content being created. And the brand, again, can also knows that there is a supply of good recycled content that, that they can include in their packaging again. So they start creating this economy of using the material again for recycled plastics. So that is what we're trying to create and stimulate that exchange and that transparency across the value chain.
Fantastic. Gerald, thank you very much for taking the time to come and talk to us about the work that you're doing at the New Plastics Economy Initiative and at the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. Really great to have you on the show and to hear your thoughts on this topic.
Thank you, Jimmy. It was my pleasure.
Perfect. That was Gerald Narba of the Ellen MacArthur Foundation on building the new plastics economy. I'm your host, Jamie Butterworth. As always, you can find more information at circularitycapital.com or get in touch with us at info@circularitycapital.com. For more information on the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, head to ellenmacarthurfoundation.org. Thanks for listening. See you next time.